I Suck at Dating with Dean Ungler and Jared Haven, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Help I Suck at Dating. My name is Jared Haven, always joined by Dean Ungler. We're both on the same coast now, so we're not 3,000 miles away, but we're still doing this virtually because, you know, the pandemic. And usually we have an intro with the show where Dean and I kind of just talk nonsensical things, but we're going to talk very sensical things because we have a great guest who's actually joining us right off the top. She's a writer, she's a director, she's an actress, she's an author of the novel Eat, Pray, hashtag FML, which is a great title. Gabrielle Stone. Gabrielle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm happy to be here during the pandemic virtually.
How's this pandemic going for you? How you doing? Staying healthy?
I'm safe and I'm healthy, so I can't complain, but it's definitely the weight of what the world's going through is weighing on me for sure.
What part of the country are you in?
I'm in LA.
Okay. Well, figures obviously with your occupation.
Right. I wish I could be elsewhere and traveling right now, but this is home.
But like I said, you're an author, you're a writer, you're a director. You wrote a novel last year called Eat, Pray, hashtag FML, which obviously is my life, which is a play off of Eat, Pray, Love. Can you just talk about your book a little bit? Now, I know one of the reasons why you started writing it, or at least what I read online, but I'd love to hear from you personally, your story as to why you felt compelled to write this novel.
Yeah, totally. I think this kind of happened to me. In 2017, I was married for almost 2 years, found out my husband was having an affair with a 19-year-old for 6 months. Filed for divorce, left. Shortly after that, I met a guy. We fell madly in love with each other, had a whirlwind romance, and he convinced me to go on a month-long trip to Italy with him. 48 hours before we were getting on the plane, he told me he needed to go by himself, and I was freaking devastated, broke my heart like my ex-husband never could have. But I had a decision to make, and that was either stay at home and be heartbroken or go travel Europe for a month by myself. So I went and took a backpack and did 6 countries over the span of a month and wrote a book about it.
Did he ever say why he couldn't go with you?
Yeah. Oh, dude. It's a long saga of drama. But he was still grieving over the death of his brother that had happened like a little over a year earlier. And I think when he fell in love with me, it kind of like opened up all that he had pushed really far down. And, you know, but I mean, give me your take on it as a man. Like, was it a total cop out or was there some validity to it?
I mean, I don't know if I could really speak upon it because, you know, to lose a brother, that's, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be able to relate or like talk about it with any type of knowledge. But I'm still glad you were able to travel by yourself. So what was the traveling by yourself? What did you learn? Not only about yourself, but about dating, relationships?
Yeah, so much. So when I realized I was taking this trip by myself, one of my biggest fears since I was a little girl is being alone and being okay by myself. My dad passed when I was young. Since then, I've had a lot of abandonment issues. And this was the universe's kind of clear way of making me go face that head on and really deal with it. So this trip really taught me that I'm never really alone because I'll never abandon myself. And that was a huge, huge like spiritual journey lesson for me. And just how capable I am. Like I had such an incredible time on this trip and I learned so much about myself, so much about the other people that I met. I met some incredible people. And some that I still keep in touch with till this day. And it was a really life-changing experience. I came back from Europe a different human in all the best ways.
All right, I've got some questions for you. So,
yeah.
And not to go back and reopen any old wounds, but I just
kind of
like-
Oh, dude, I talk about this every week. There's no, it's fine.
Right. And that's why I feel comfortable asking you these questions. Okay, so I'll get to the whole 1 month relationship and the guy leaving you 48 hours before the flight to Europe thing. But just to backtrack even further, so you were married for 2 years and you found out that your husband at the time was having an affair with an 19-year-old for 6 months. So just out of my own curiosity, how did you find that out? How did that whole thing unfold?
So I missed my calling as a private detective. I actually didn't even go looking for it at first. We had been having issues for, you know, 5 or 6 months. And I didn't realize why. We were in therapy. I was working my ass off to try and like get us back on track and couldn't figure out why everything wasn't working when I was doing everything that our therapist was, everything that he was asking. And eventually it came to a head where, and this is all like detailed in the book, which I wasn't planning on originally writing about, but all my girlfriends were like, no, dude, this is like an episode of CSI. You have to write about this. So one night we were at our house and I was putting away laundry and I went over to a sock drawer and opened it up to put a bunch of socks in. And there was a phone in there. And I was like, why is your phone in your sock drawer? And the second I picked it up, a text popped up that had her name with a heart emoji in the contact.
Oh no!
And he came over and like snatched it from me, went into the bathroom, came out like 45 seconds later and was like, here, it's not even working. Just take my phone. Unbeknownst to me, he went in with his second phone, came out and like handed me his original first phone. And so then after that, he went on a trip for work and I started kind of knowing something was going on. And I was in our office and his computer was up. He had like one of those big iMacs and a ping on his email came in. And I went over and looked at it and it was an Uber receipt that was from the city he was supposed to be in, so somewhere that was like 2 hours away. And that was kind of all I needed to like be like, okay, I'm going to look through his email at this point. And every like hotel receipt, like couples massage, dinner reservations, it was all there. And I was like, okay, well, here we go. Divorce time.
Wow. And yeah. So then you confronted him about it, obviously.
I did when he got home. So I knew for 2 weeks before I served him the papers because I didn't want him to get wind of it and file before me. And mind you, during all this, like my friend and I were investigating and finding out who this other girl was, which I did by calling the Four Seasons and telling them that we had used a fake name and I was doing taxes and could you give me the name that the reservation was under? And then we found her online. It was like way too easy. and then, when he came home, we had a process server at my house and served him the papers and sat down and had one last conversation and walked out of the house and never looked back.
And do you guys talk to this day or is it kind of one of those things that's in the past? Yeah.
No, I mean, I've run into him and his girlfriend. As far as I know, they're still together. This was like a year ago. I ran into both of them at the gym and it was an interesting conversation.
I can only imagine. Okay. And then fast forward from there. So you are divorced now and then you meet this guy, I would assume in Los Angeles.
Yeah, technically I wasn't divorced yet. The whole process. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was clear on what was happening, but the actual process takes like a year. So I had left the house, mind you, I had known about the affair for 2 weeks now. So I leave and about 3 weeks later, I reconnected with this guy who I had casually, like super casually dated before I had even met my ex-husband, which was like 6 years ago. And he DM'd me on Instagram and we started talking and he was like, you want to go hang out and go to the beach? And I was like, sure. Thinking, you know, if I'm going to like go casually have fun with someone, this is the one person I've ever been able to be casual with. And he was hot and he's, you know, so I went.
Jackpot.
Yeah, I went and it just went from 0 to 100 really fucking fast.
Do you think that might have been the ultimate downfall of why because you said earlier, like dig into this and figure out why he might have, or, you know, whether the whole like brother passing away thing might be legit. And obviously, you know, you can't really judge someone else on how they're going to react with death or loss or anything like that.
Yeah, totally.
But do you ever think that the fact that it became so hot and heavy so fast might have something to do with it? Or...
I think so. But I also think that, no, I don't think, I know that he had a ton of healing to do around that. And I know why I had to take this trip by myself and how it changed my life. So I think we really came into each other's lives and we were both the catalyst of some serious soul healing.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think it was extremely insane. I mean, I remember my mom and all my friends being like, I'm sorry, you just got out of a marriage, like a brutally shocking divorce marriage, and you're like hopping into this relationship. And we were like we're having babies, we're like, we're done, we're getting married, this is it, this is my person. Oh yeah, met his whole family, like would tell all of his friends about me. It was like really serious and intense. And so to have that go from like this level to, I think I need to go on this trip by myself and break up with you, was, I mean, it was more devastating than my divorce was, for sure.
I think, you ever think about revisiting that relationship? Maybe it was timing.
Yeah, how does it, because that doesn't just end, right? Like, you guys still have phones to text. You're in the same country, at least when you land.
Those DMs are still open.
Yeah.
So we actually flew on the plane together, sitting with each other. Our tickets were from LA to London, and then we were supposed to go on to Rome. So I have a friend in London that I went to high school with. So she was like, look, just come here. You can start your trip here before you decide where you want to go. So we flew to London together. I stayed in London. He went on to Rome. And then like the saga roller coaster of, you know, are we going to see each other? Are we not going to see each other? Should we meet up at the end of the trip? Like, do you even still have feelings for me? Goes throughout the entire book. And I don't want to like say if we did or not, because it'll totally ruin the ending for some people that will eventually read it. But yeah, I mean, it's, let's just say that's the biggest question I get is like, is there going to be a book two, and is he involved in it? Because it was so open-ended.
So, okay. So for the listener out there that might not know this, a flight from LA to London is about 12 hours long. So you had just broken up with this guy.
Yeah.
And then you sit next to him for 12 hours on a flight.
Yeah.
What is that like?
You know, I get that question a lot, and people are like, why didn't you change your ticket? Was it refundable? And, to be honest, for whatever reason, everything between us was totally normal and the same. We just weren't kissing and holding hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was obviously like devastated and my heart was fucking broken. But other than that, we were kind of like just transitioned into this friendship that kind of was okay. So it wasn't like this weird, awkward plane ride. He took the picture of me with my backpack on where I posted at the airport and was like, hey, everybody, I got divorced and I'm going to Europe. And like, here's what's been going on in my life that I haven't been talking about. And it was really weirdly normal. It kind of got harder once I was in Europe and on my trip. And I felt like at times he just disappeared and like wasn't supporting me after I had like been sent off on this journey I didn't really ask for. But the flight itself was kind of weirdly okay. And our return tickets were booked together too.
Oh, you said you didn't want to spoil that. And so for
we did fly back together, because that's how the tickets were booked. So
do you think that normalcy, that established normalcy makes it harder or easier? Because it's like you can have both arguments where, oh, it's easy to get back into being friends with this person because that's just who we are. Or it's like, oh, things were so great between us and the chemistry was there that we were able to stay friends through it all. Do you think that made it easier or harder for you?
I think harder for me, because it wasn't my decision. And I didn't, like, he was so like, you changed my life. And like, I never don't want to have you in my life. Like, you have to be my best friend. And I was like, well, I wasn't really looking for a best friend. Like, I have my friends. I was in love with you. So it was this weird kind of like, he was asking me to flip this switch that had gone off in him. And I was like, dude, I'm not really capable of doing that. But he meant so much to me. And we had gotten so close during that month and a half that I was trying to force myself to do that, you know?
So when I picture Europe, right? So you get to Europe, you say you're in Europe for a month. When I picture Europe, I think of like that movie Euro Trip, where you're going to clubs, you're drinking absinthe, you're partying, you're backpacking, you're exploring, you're staying at hostels, you're hitchhiking to get from place to place.
Yeah, Scotty doesn't know.
So, and I'm sure in your book you chronicle some of these crazy adventures that you might have had, right? But what is that kind of like the vibe that it was, or was it totally like soul searching, like
off the grid, put your phone away? I mean, well, okay. So for the phone away thing, I was originally going to be like, I'm going to, you know, really disconnect and like go and just be in the moment. And when I posted that picture and like wrote about my divorce and like that I was going off on this trip by myself, hundreds and hundreds of people reached out to me and were like, oh my God, this changed my whole day. Like, please keep sharing your journey. Like, I want to follow this with you. So I ended up really posting quite a bit on that trip, which now I'm really thankful for, because every day when people are reading the book, they're like stalking my Instagram and like, oh my God, this is that place that she was talking about. So it's kind of like this cool interactive thing. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I had a one night stand in Amsterdam. I like, there was lots of guys on my trip. All I knew about hostels, which you'll probably appreciate because you're a travel guy, right? All I knew about hostels on the plane over was that there was a movie and people got brutally murdered in it. I was like, what do you mean I'm supposed to stay in a hostel? Now I'm like the number one advocate for them and love them and tell all my friends, like, if you're ever going to travel, stay in hostels and go by yourself. But it, yeah, so there was a lot of partying, a lot of not sleeping, a lot of drinking. But there was also a lot of, you know, soul searching and reflecting. I wrote 3/4 of this book on my trip. So there were a lot of days where I was in a cafe, just like writing for 6 hours. So it was kind of like both kind of mixed together.
Nice.
Not to spoil the end of the book, but do you think after friends cross that line of being intimate with one another, can you ever go back to being friends?
That's a good question. I've had other situations that pertain to that. This one is kind of different because we never started as friends. Like we went and hung out and we're like, oh, we're gonna do this. But on the other side of it, it's hard to backtrack when you've established a relationship that's based on intimacy and like chemistry. It's hard to backtrack and be like, oh, okay, let's just be friends now. I think it's doable if both people really want to commit to that. And I think it takes some work, but it's definitely not easy in my opinion.
You sound exactly like one of my former girlfriends. I remember we broke up and I was like, well, yeah, we can still obviously be friends, right? And she goes, well, we were never friends to begin with. Like, we basically started out dating each other. So how do you expect us to be friends now?
Right.
And you basically said the exact same thing that she said. It's funny. And there's a lot of truth to it too. I agree with it.
But it's tough because I have exes that, exes from a long time ago, like college years that I'm friends with. Like we don't go hang out on the regular, but we're friends and we talk and, you know, we're good in each other's lives. But yeah, it's a difficult thing to navigate, especially when not both people feel the same way. And it's usually, unless two people are like mutually breaking up, which is kind of rare. I think it's a hard road to navigate.
Especially when there's another significant other in play. Cause then you want to be honest, be like, well, we did hook up, but that will never happen again. And then the idea of you hanging out with somebody that you used to hook up with, that always throws a wrench in things.
It's super weird. And it takes a really secure woman or man to be like, yeah, that's totally fine. You know, it's a weird dynamic for sure. I mean, so you guys probably have some weird experience with that since you guys started on The Bachelor, I have to admit, like, that's my guilty pleasure reality TV. So
so you've seen Bachelor, you know what's up. It's just like, I think we all accept the fact that like, hey, listen, this is what we all signed up for. So we have to kind of overlook some things and just accept that, you know, like,
half,
for example, I was on
each other.
Exactly. Like, I was on Caitlin Bristow's season and like we had a good relationship, but we've become friends afterwards. And Ashley, my wife, is super cool with it now, to the point where Caitlin and her now boyfriend, Jason, were at our wedding, you know?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was cool.
That just means you have a badass wife too. So,
oh yeah, she's both badass. As you can see, like, I'm currently recording in her glam room. So she it just shows my place in the relationship.
I love it.
And so if you could tell the audience one thing that you'd really want them to take away from reading your book, what would it be?
That there is a light at the end of the tunnel, no matter how dark it may look. And it is usually more beautiful than you could ever imagine. So keep going.
Oh, that's really
and travel.
Sweet.
What about travel? I think that seems like a big catalyst.
Well,
too, right?
For sure. I mean, I think everyone should solo travel at least once in their life. It totally changed my life. I just did my second solo trip by choice this time to Southeast nice. Asia. Nice. And it was incredible. And if I had a choice now, I would prefer to travel alone as opposed to with friends or family. It's so freeing and you learn so much about yourself and you meet people in such an authentic way because nobody has time to put their bullshit layer on like they have at home. And it's so refreshing to just be able to like openly be yourself and do whatever you want and not be like locked into any schedules. It's amazing.
It was, when you were explaining your first experience in Europe, I had a similar situation, minus like the heartbreak and the divorce and all that kind of stuff. but I did a month and a half solo trip through Europe and like Asia, maybe like two years ago for the first time ever. And that was like, it changed my life. And I guess I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back, it like instilled a lot of things in me that I hadn't realized, and like confidence on all these types of things. So I agree with you. I always tell people that whenever they ask to travel alone, because it really does like, it helps you realize what your own priorities are, where you're like, you're waking up to do the things that you want to do, not what other people want to do. So it helps you kind of figure out exactly what you like doing, which is really
totally cool. Where did you go in Europe?
I did Amsterdam. I did not have a one night stand there though.
Did you really do Amsterdam? Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I actually met up with some friends out there, and man, the red light district, you hear the stories about it. And I always think it's not going to, I always think nothing's going to like line up to what people really say about it. But red light district was like, really, it is exactly what you think it is. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I did like the main staple European countries and some Eastern European, like Poland and, Slovakia, which is pretty cool.
Your favorite?
I always encourage people. I love Asia the most. I know you did Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Where did you go? Like Vietnam?
So I was supposed to do 2 weeks in Vietnam and 2 weeks in Bali. And I was in Vietnam for like a week and my heart just wasn't getting what I wanted and not settling. And I was like, good, I'm going to go to Thailand. And I flew to Thailand and spent a week and a half in Pai, which is this like little mountain town, 3 hours outside of Chiang Mai. And it was the most magical, incredible place I have ever been. I swear I could live there if I had to move anywhere other than here.
Chiang Mai itself is pretty isolated too. So 3.5 hours outside of Chiang Mai.
Pretty deep. It's wild, but it was like all the little cafes were like, you were walking into a secret garden, like just incredible nature and like one long street with the night markets and stuff. It was awesome. And then I did a week and a half in Bali.
Nice. Yeah, Bali is great too. I've been there. It's funny actually, Kaylin and I were just talking about moving to Bali, but we'll see if that ever comes to it.
Are you gonna record the podcast from Bali?
I mean, hey, we're recording it from our apartments in Los Angeles, so I figure why not be able to do it from Bali.
As long as you can do the podcast in Bali, I'm fine.
More importantly, are we invited to Bali?
Yeah, we'll get a nice big estate. We'll have a bunch of guest rooms for all you guys to come visit.
Much appreciated.
Gabrielle, so your book is out on shelves now, right?
It's exclusively on Amazon. It's in paperback, ebook, and audiobook.
Oh, amazing. Okay, great. Yeah. So if you don't want to have to go through the cumbersome experience of ordering a book and reading it, you can just listen to the audiobook.
Yeah, and I narrate it myself. It was a ton of fun to do. It was wild to like act out scenes between my ex-husband and I and all of the ridiculousness that ensued after that. So it's a fun ride for sure.
Kind of sounds therapeutic a little bit.
Yeah, and totally. There are times in the audiobook where like you can hear me like getting choked up and times where I'm laughing my ass off. So yeah, it was definitely a weird form of therapy.
And like you were saying, we might be in the works of a part two, right?
Yeah, you know, I get asked that like weekly, and I have written parts of it. I know how it begins and how it ends. It's just a matter of timing and if the people involved will sign off on it, because obviously it's about my life and it involves real people. So I'm always, you know, trying to be respectful of that. The guy that left me before Europe was so supportive about it and signed a release for me to do it, as did his family. And it was really important for me to be able to do that with a good conscience and, you know, have that blessing. So we'll see.
But the ex-husband, you just...
Oh, no. There was no
As way. I would expect. As I would expect.
But I did. I everyone's names in the books are changed. And my ex-husband's name, I chose the name that when I found everything, that was the name he used to book everything under and like what his second phone was registered to.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So he knows. Nice.
That's a good F you to him. Yeah. Awesome. Well, for the listeners that want to check it out, like we said, it's Eat, Pray, FML. Be sure to check it out on Amazon. Thank you for jumping on the podcast and sharing the story. I want to hear more, so I'm definitely going to check it out myself.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm happy to send both of you guys a book. So just let me know.
Sweet. We definitely will. Thank you
so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Gabrielle.
All right. Welcome back. Jared, we jumped right into it with Gabrielle that we didn't really get a chance to get updated with your life. And I'm sure a lot has changed with both of our lives in the past week. So what's been going on with you?
So much. Nothing has changed. We're hanging in. Yeah. We're holding home. Dude, I'm just... I don't know what to think anymore. I'm nervous. I'm nervous about the future of 2020. Not to get all negative Nancy on you, but COVID's just not going away, man.
COVID's not going away. On top of that, the bubonic plague is potentially have resurfaced in China.
Yeah, I heard about that one case. Yeah. I mean, hopefully that turns into nothing. Hopefully that's like Murder Hornets part two, where like it was a big deal for 24 hours and then it just went away.
We're in the midst of an election year too, to top it all off.
Oh my God, man. It's cuckoo. But it was fun. So on Saturday, we drove down to Tanner and Jade's to just cook out for the 4th of July. We stayed outside. You know, we tried to stay 6 feet away from each other. It was tough with the kids, obviously, in the backyard. But, you know, we stayed outside. We didn't congregate inside. And that's just going to be, like, I guess, like the future for the next, like, whenever we get a vaccine, 7-8 months. And so that was nice.
COVID can't cross the doors and enter inside? Or enter outside? Or how does it work?
It has a much more, I mean, from this, listen, don't take this as gospel. I'm known for being
Dr. Haven reporting for duty.
But this, from the things that I've been reading on COVID, it has a lot more difficult time transmitting outdoors than it does indoors, which is why, you know, you see restaurants much more have outdoor seating and aren't allowed to eat indoors and so on and so forth. And, so, yeah, because I was reading in the New York Times, there was an article a while back about China did a study about, I think, like 700 COVID cases, and only one was traced back to an outdoor transmission. Every other one was indoor. Anyway.
I guess the air circulates a lot better, so it's less recycled.
And apparently light might have a big factor on this thing. I don't know if you heard about UV lights trying to destroy these things or trying to destroy COVID. And they're saying sunlight, it dies pretty quickly in sunlight. So that's why they tell you to stay outside. Anyway, it was a nice fourth. It was good to see the kiddos, Tanner and Jade's kids, Brooks and Emmy. And Jade's pregnant again, obviously. So it was, I feel like every time
she's pregnant again, didn't they just have their baby?
I mean, Brooks is going to be a year in late July, later this month, I think he'll be a year. So she, yeah.
I just remember doing that that little spinoff show with you and Ashley, and we did the gender reveal.
Yeah, and she's pregnant again.
That was like a year ago. That was like maybe barely over a year ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, they couldn't go to the wedding because she just gave birth, and the wedding was a year ago in August.
That's right.
I know. Jeez,
that's crazy.
She's always
pregnant. They're just pumping them out.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, yeah. Tanner always said that if he, you know, if they were going to have another one, they wanted, like, kids to bang them out quickly so they could just, you know, I don't know, in 18 years enjoy their life, I guess.
That, like, so I see the reasoning behind that. And especially, like, the closer in age that their kids are, the better of friends they'll probably be.
Yeah. Honestly, that's one of the reasons, certainly not why Ashley and I want to rush into having kids, but it would be really nice to have a kid, hopefully sometime soon, so they could be around the same age as their kids as well.
I think my oldest brother and I didn't really become friends until I was like 22 because he's 9 years older than I was. So he's, you know, 20 years old. I'm 11. He's not going to be friends with an 11-year-old.
Yeah, there's no relatability. You're watching exactly. SpongeBob.
Exactly. And I didn't realize that for a long time too. I was like 18, 19 at the time and was still pretty stupid. I was like, why does Brad hate me so much? And then I, you know, looking back now, I was like, oh, it's because he was 30 and I was 20 and he... Imagine being friends with a 20. I mean, yeah, I guess it depends, but it's a little bit different.
Yeah, my sister and I didn't really get along all that much. I mean, we got along pretty well, but when I was in junior high and she was in high school, we started like going our separate ways a little bit because she was an upperclassman. I was a, you know, underclassman. I almost said younger classman. I was like, that's not the term. But then once she started going to college and then I started getting an upperclassman, and then once I went to college, we became close again. But yeah, it's all about age, bro.
Having an older sister is tough, man. I remember when I was in middle school and then a little bit in high school too, the big thing that kids would pick on me for, they'd always be like, dude, your sister's so hot. And I don't know why I always took such big offense to it.
Oh, I hated it. I wanted to beat up everybody who said that. Why? I don't know.
Yeah, same. I remember I punched like one of my best friends in the face. Or no, I tried to punch him in the chest and he blocked it into his face. But he was like, he called my sister hot. And I was like, don't call her that. And in hindsight, it's like, you just say thanks. Yeah, she's a very pretty girl.
Yeah, be like, thank you very much. I think it was just like a, I don't know, don't touch her type thing. Protective? Yeah. I don't really know. But no, it was nice having an older sister. I mean, she's the one who introduced me to boy bands. And now here we are. 30 years later, I'm still obsessed with Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, we had very different older sister experiences than it sounds like.
It makes sense. I mean, this is why Ashley just thinks I'm a guy who likes boy bands. That's the reason why she likes me so much. What else? What else is happening in the world, man? I wish we had a single person on to like talk about dating during COVID. But Tori's.
I'm glad you're not interested
right
in my
now.
July 4th at all.
It's how was your 4th of July?
You know, out of spite, I'm not even going to answer the question.
No, I want to know. I follow your life on Instagram, so I see that you went skydiving again.
No, it's great that you don't even want to ask any of these questions. It's a bit egocentric of you. But here, I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to host the podcast.
I was just trying to. Well, no. I want to hear about your 4th. I want to hear about it.
It's fine, man. It was good. Anyways, no, I'm just kidding. It was good. We got together with a couple close friends and just same thing, grilled outside, played cornhole. That was basically it. I was in bed by, I think, 8:30 that night.
Sounds like a great night.
Felt like an old man. I was yelling at kids in the alleyway that were lighting off fireworks. I'm sure your dogs hate the fireworks. Pappy, like, freaks out. And there's still, like, last night, for instance, it was like there's someone lit a firework off at, like, 3 in the morning, like, a block away from us.
People and, suck.
Not only does it wake us up, but then it, like, Pappy's, like, shaking for the next 30 to 45 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's stupid. Did you see, like, the drone shot over L.A. where they showed all the fireworks going off in the entire city?
No, I'd heard about it. I need to look at it, though, but I'm sure it was pretty cool.
I mean, it was cool, but also, like, disheartening because it's like, they're just, like, jerks like you were talking about.
Well, yeah, it seems like this year especially there was even more fireworks, which I don't maybe understand why there would be more this year. Like, it's not like anyone is more patriotic this year than they have been in years past.
Well, I think it's just more, depends on your definition of patriotic. I feel like people were like, you know, the people out there who are saying no mask and you know, are saying like my freedom comes before me, you know, putting on a mask. Like, I'm sure they were pretty adamant about throwing fireworks on there, especially like being cooped up for 3 months and like the government telling you can't leave your house. I'm sure they were like, F you, I'm doing fireworks. And there were no public fireworks in the area, so I'm sure people went out of their way because they were like, screw this, I want to see fireworks on the 4th of July, and if I can't see any, then I'll just do them myself.
I don't know. I think there's something bigger afoot, but that we don't know about yet.
What, like aliens setting off fireworks on the 4th of July?
Not necessarily aliens, but I've read a couple of different conspiracy theories about why there's been so many fireworks lately.
I would love to hear one.
I don't know enough about them to share them. And I don't want to sound ignorant because of my lack of knowledge on them, but there's interesting things to read out there about it.
I'm going to Google it right after this podcast is done. 4th of July conspiracy theory fireworks.
Yeah, you should. You go down a rabbit hole, you'll end up, recording this podcast next week, having just gotten out of it.
I got nothing else to do. It's either do that or play Fortnite.
Oh, you're playing Fortnite now?
You know, I dabble. I play.
You gotta get you on Call of Duty, man.
Yeah, man, dude, I suck though. It's not even fun. Like, anytime I play live, I just get shot immediately, and I'm like, all right, well, that was fun for 5 seconds. Let me get the hell out of here and do something else. I don't know, man. I've been working out outside more. I canceled my gym membership because obviously I'm not gonna go to a gym until it's safe, and it's not gonna be safe in my mind for a very long time. So I've been working out outside more, and that's about it. I went like sporting equipment.
Exciting stuff.
It's so exciting. This is what happens during a pandemic. This is what happens when you have to record at your house. There's just nothing to be done. I mean, we're healthy, so we can't complain.
Kaylin and I think we talked about this with Gabrielle a little bit, not to get all political or anything, and we're not going to share our stances or anything, but if a certain someone gets reelected in November, we had a handshake agreement to move out of the country.
Oh, don't be those. Well, okay. All right. Then here's the thing. I'm not going to say my political affiliation either, but I, okay. Anyway, back in 2016, when everybody was saying, if Trump gets elected, I'm moving. I didn't like that because I thought, listen, if you love, you know, if you want Trump out, then you have to stay in the country so you can vote him out in 2020. So I don't know. Don't move.
So here I am.
Don't move. I mean, I guess if he wins, then he's, you know, he's out in 4 years anyway, because, you know, you can only serve two terms. So I guess it doesn't really matter.
I was one of those people back in 2016 that said that exact same thing. I said I was going to move to South Africa. I didn't realize how expensive it is to move to another country and how difficult it can be. But now that I have the means, able, and I'm able to do it, I think it's a lot more realistic.
And you have somebody who would move with you.
Right, exactly. I did early balloting. I'll vote again in November, but I'll do my parts. But if what happens is what we don't want to happen, then I think we're going to take extreme measures and get the hell out of here. But that's just a bit of an update on mine and Caitlin's situation. You know, we're looking at New Zealand. It's beautiful. We're looking at Bali, as we talked about with Gabrielle.
I have heard New Zealand is incredible. I'd love to go visit it.
Caitlin was actually, it was a handshake agreement. You know, I hadn't really thought much of it since the handshake. And then I talked to Caitlin 4 hours later and she goes, yeah, I was looking up apartments in New Zealand. They're actually pretty affordable. I was like, oh, you're looking up Zillow Zestimates in New Zealand?
Hey, you got to plan ahead.
And it's apparently like the safest country in the world.
I believe that.
And their prime minister is a badass.
Who's their prime minister?
I don't know her name, but she's that woman. She's just like handling COVID and a bunch of other stuff really well.
I feel like a lot of people from New Zealand are just badasses.
New Zealand's prime minister is, I'm going to butcher this name, Jacinda Ardern. But yeah, that's the couple update that's what's going on over here with Caitlin and Dean.
Well, I hope you don't move for a couple different reasons. If you do, then I'll be more than happy to come visit you anytime. All right. Well, I guess we should talk about like emails. We have a couple of emails to answer. I also have a DM from the Help I Suck at Dating Instagram, which everybody should be following by now. Again, Help I Suck at Dating on Instagram. Plus, give us a 5-star review on iTunes because we just want it. And again, like Dean said, you can roast us in the comment section if you'd like. As long as you leave 5 stars, I don't really give a crap. And if you don't like the podcast, don't leave a review.
Well, if you don't like the podcast, give us 5 stars and tell us what you don't like about it so we can fix it.
That's fair. That's a good point.
How does that sound?
So I have a DM from...
Wait. Jared. Slow your roll. Back it up a second.
What?
Just don't put the cart in front of the horse. I would love to hear this DM. I would love to hear these emails. But before we do that, we got to take a quick break.
All right, that's fair.
We are back to answer some emails and Jared's DM that he's very excited about. But before we do that, there was one big breakup in Bachelor Nation that we had this past week. And while we don't talk Bachelor Nation often on this podcast, we are a dating podcast. And so when big news like this breaks, we at least have to discuss it. So,
Dating podcast. We're Help I Suck at Dating, a dating podcast. I don't know what's wrong with me right now. I'm losing my mind. Continue, Dean.
Jared has had too much caffeine today.
Or not enough.
So as I'm sure you saw in the headlines, Cassie and Colton broke up.
I did. I saw online Cassie and Colton broke up. Very sad news. I like both of them a lot. We actually hung out with Cassie and Colton right before everything got shut down. We had this movie premiere thingy. It was really good to see them. They seemed in good spirits. They seemed... very lovey-dovey. So I don't know what changed since, but I wish them both the best. I really like them both personally. Colton, I've met a few times. Super, super nice guy. Every time I hung out with him. Cassie, I've got to hang out with a couple different times. Ashley's definitely close with Cassie. But she's been extremely nice every time, which is always refreshing when you meet people from a Bachelor. Who are just very down to earth, especially, you know, as you know. Well, it's just like sometimes we watch the show and I don't know. I feel like sometimes I meet people from the show, I don't get the best vibes. So it was really cool meeting Colton and Cassie and getting really good vibes from him. Anyway, I feel bad for him.
That was the first time you'd ever met him?
No. I met Colton before he was The Bachelor. And then I met Cassie. I forget when I first met Cassie. Probably some event. I don't remember. I mean, they both were really young. Cassie's what, 23, 24? Colton's, I think, right around that age too. Mid-20s, 25, something like that. You know, they had a rocky start to even begin with. with her leaving the show and then him jumping the fence after her, which is very romantic, but then leaving just boyfriend, girlfriend. You know, anytime you leave the show, as you guys know, it's just, you know, you're already kind of fighting an uphill battle because then you have to kind of rewatch all the steps that led to the point that you guys were together, which most likely includes you dating other people. But I mean, who knows what happened?
I'm curious what you think happened though. What, like, cause like you said, you kind of gave us the whole synopsis on the relationship. They had the rough start and then, we don't really know exactly what transpired after the fact, but like, who do you think broke up with who?
Who do I think broke up with who? I have no idea.
Yeah. Just, I mean, it, obviously we have no idea, but let's speculate a little bit. What do you think?
I think that, I mean, they've probably, I don't know. I mean, they've probably, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they've been broken up maybe for a little while, judging from Instagram. Because I saw that he, like, they haven't posted together even before the breakup. I think, like, ever since, you know, after he recovered from COVID, I remember, like, seeing him, I think, at his home in Colorado, maybe, or something on Instagram where they were, she was in California and he was in a different part of the country. I don't know.
Do you think that might have had anything to do with it, the fact that he had COVID?
No. She said it on the greatest seasons of all time. Like, Harrison mentioned something like that, like, did it have anything to do with, you know, being cooped up or quarantined together? And she said no. I mean, I guess being quarantined together, though, it can be a make or break for a relationship. I mean, you really, truly find out if you, you know, can make it through some serious shit together. That's what Ashley's dad said. Ashley, I mean, granted, we're already married, so we're fine. But Ashley's dad was really funny when we were at his house for quite an extended period of time. He was like, if you guys make it through this, you can make it through anything.
That's fair. Yeah, I think it's definitely tricky.
Well, you might have a more insider knowledge with this because, I mean, your girlfriend was obviously on Colton's season. She's very good friends with Cassie, if I remember correctly. I don't know if they're still really good friends, but I remember them leaving the show, and they were like best friends.
Yeah, they were good friends on the show. I don't really want to bring Kaylin into this at all, so I'm gonna go ahead and say nothing. Like you said, wish them both the best. I don't know, when I look at the relationship, I think that they both just have a lot to learn about each other, or I'm sorry, about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I was obviously critical in that one drunken interview that I did in Las Vegas about how Colton, do you remember that one? I was like wearing that stupid pink corduroy jacket. I said something along the lines of, Colton is going to have the dumpster fire of a season.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Oh, you were so drunk.
I've been pretty vocally critical about Colton in the past, so I'm going to go ahead and spare any harsh words.
Have you met him yet? Have you met Colton?
Yeah, I mean, we were friends, probably. Well, I guess friends, quote unquote. We met at a wedding, at my friend Tiffany and Caleb's wedding, and then hung out a few times before he left for Paradise. And then he got the bachelor gig and he's too cool for me. So it's just kind of how it works these days, yeah. I guess. You know what I mean?
I experienced that with Nick. Once he became bachelor, I wasn't cool enough. But now he's come back down and we're friends again.
I just think it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough to, and I mean, we've experienced maybe to some varying degrees of this too, just to be like thrust into the spotlight at such a young age. You have other people telling you what you want. And then you start to like take on those values and you think that that's what you want, but in reality it might not be. And then you have strangers telling you how great your relationship is when in reality it might not be that great. And so you're staying together because you think it's great because other people are telling you it is, but it's actually not. I was honestly shocked when I saw the news, and I had no insight into the relationship whatsoever beforehand, but it's like, you know, anytime you see a bachelor breakup, especially like an actual bachelor and his pick breakup, it's big news rather than like a Paradise couple that no one really cares about. But yeah, I don't know. I was shocked. I thought that they would have at least ridden that a little longer. They were together for like a year and a half, something like that, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know. But like you said, once you have external pressure, like when you do from a bachelor couple, and I mean, everybody experiences this, right? Where, you know, even if you're not, even if you didn't date from a TV show, you have people who tell you like, you guys are perfect for each other or you're not perfect for each other. And everybody has their own opinion about what you should do or what you shouldn't do. And so there's just so much exterior pressure. And then it's like magnified 10 times when you're on the show. And so it's hard to navigate. And like you said, especially when you're the lead with the person that you pick, and then you have to kind of go back and rewatch all the steps. And then obviously Colton had a tell-all book, which kind of made everybody relive his entire bachelor season.
I wonder if that put any more strain on things. You read the book.
I did read the book, but
how was it?
Oh, very overly positive towards Cassie to the point where he was, he said that he knew, you know, halfway through that he wanted to pick Cassie and how amazing she was and how good she is for him. And I mean, it was just overly praising Cassie. So I can't imagine it had anything to do with the book just because of how nice he writes about her. I don't know, but of course, wish them both the best. Hope they do well. Feels weird, like even that we have to like really comment on it, because I don't know. Like I said, I'm friendly with both of them. I'd say I'm you know, friends with them, but not to the point where I feel like I have any knowledge, or like I should address the situation.
Do you think it's almost easier for you to like give your opinion on something when you like, if it was like Jade and Tanner breaking up, it would almost be harder for you to have a comment on because they're like your best friends.
Yeah. It's kind of too close. I'm almost too close to the situation where I would know. Yeah.
So that's why I want you to have like a invigorated comment about the breakup, like why they broke up. But I understand where you're coming from. You like them both. You've got no ill will towards either of them.
We can come up with like some sort of story if you want about how like one of them was living a double life and Colton had a second family. We could do that.
Maybe we'll save that for next week.
Yeah.
All right. Well, like we said, all we can really do is speculate here. I did not watch the Greatest of All Time episode last night, but I do know that Cassie gave an interview. I don't really know what that covered, but I guess it's just one of those things where we might never know the full story. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to those emails and to that DM that we promised right after this. All right, and we are back after that quick break. Thanks for sticking with us. We are unfortunately a little pressed for time. And so instead of answering all the emails that we've gotten, which we love, we appreciate, isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. Email us any questions or dating stories that you have. We'll get to them next week. I feel like we say that too often. Jared has a DM, and he wants to share that, and then we can dive into that a little bit. So, Jared, floor is yours.
So we have a DM, and it says, help. If you use this on the podcast, I would like to remain anonymous, a.k.a. it's from Nick Vial. I kid. It's not from Nick. Hi. Have you ever taken the Enneagram? I think you are a 6. She's talking about me, Jared. I'm curious. I'm a 6, and I struggle a lot with the fears and anxiety of marriage. I've been with my boyfriend for 6 years, and we're talking about engagement. I love him so much, and he's my best friend. I couldn't picture a life without him. I don't know why, but I just feel so anxious and nervous about any big life decision because I think about all the what ifs and the things that could go wrong. What if he's not my person? What if I find someone better? What if I'm making the wrong decision? I wonder if this is something you can relate to, and if so, do you have any advice to overcome this? I love the show. I love you and Ashley. I love Dean and Kaylin. They're perfect. She's also an Almost Famous listener. I don't get it. And she's a member of Suck Army.
So suck.
Help, I suck at dating. We haven't done the chat in a while. We got to bring that back. Thank you so much, Anonymous, for writing this DM. We really appreciate it. And we really appreciate everybody who DMs and writes us emails and listens to this podcast, because without you guys, there would be no podcast. An Enneagram is, do you know what that is, Dean?
Well, I looked up Enneagram number 6, and it is the loyalist, the committed, security-oriented type, engaging, responsible, anxious, and suspicious.
Well, an Enneagram, that's like the... Is that the thing that girls used to make in high school? Where it's like... You flip it back and forth? No?
No. Okay, never mind. It's not that thing at all.
What is
it? The Enneagram is like a personality test that you take, and it basically puts you into categories and subcategories that define your personality in a sense.
All right, and she said she's a six. What is that?
So a six is the loyalist. It's the committed, security-oriented type, engaging, responsible, anxious, and suspicious. Which I was surprised to hear that she said she was a six, and then she said that she was hesitant about marriage talks with her boyfriends of 6 years, unless I'm misremembering it, and she said 6 years and not Enneagram number six, if you want to fact check that.
I think she said no. She says she thought that I was a six, and she says that she is a six. So
she is a six.
Yes. And I could see you being a six. She's been dating her boyfriend for 6 years. Lots of sixes.
I could see, I could actually definitely see you being a six. I could see that pretty clearly here. And the advice that she's looking for is she's just uncertain about the relationship and taking it to the next level of marriage.
Yeah, she says she's just unsure about any big time life decisions. She always gets nervous and anxious about them, which I would say, anonymous, everybody does. Like, this is speaking from someone who's married, and I was very confident before. I'm still very confident in our decision to get married, Ashley and I. But that doesn't mean that there's zero doubt involved. Of course you're going to get nervous. I mean, you think about whether it being getting married or having kids or what college to go to, or if you're buying a house, any like big monumental life decision you're going to make, you're going to get really nervous about. And if you're not nervous about it, then all the props to you. But I don't know how you don't have any sliver of doubt when you're making some of the most important decisions of your life. So I would say, don't feel weird about that.
As a six, from a six to a six, I think that's pretty good advice. I think in the back of our head, we all kind of are scared to make those big decisions, like marriage, for instance, because that's not just going to affect your next day, your next week, your next month, but it's going to affect the rest of your life, essentially. And any decision that's going to have that big of an impact on your life is going to come with its reservations and uncertainties. Obviously, you can speak more towards that because you are the married one among the two of us here.
Well, I think both of us have made like pretty drastic life decisions, you know?
I agree. I think that marriage itself is just much more of a conscious decision, whereas you make these little nuanced decisions every single day that affect our lives. But marriage is like a very conscious, like, I'm going to commit the next 60 years to this one person. And I think that as a concept can be pretty scary too, especially to a lot of people. But it sounds like this person has been dating their partner for 6 years. So it's like you've already committed 8% of your entire life to this person. What's the rest of the rest of it?
8%?
Really, yeah.
Hold on. I got to figure out the life expectancy you're putting on this person right now. Let's see.
Yeah. I gave her like 73, 74 years.
Oh, yeah. You gave her good. Hold on. Sorry, my calculator's really slow. Oh, yeah. You're giving her like more than that. You're giving her like 90 years. Good.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I think, like you said, it's a big decision. It's pretty normal to be afraid and anxious about a decision like that. But obviously, you being someone that's taken that leap before, it's clearly paying dividends, you know, emotionally and socially.
Yeah. I mean, again, a commitment is a choice. And so you kind of have to, you either are prepared to dive headfirst into this relationship and commitment, or you're not. And that's really the question you're going to have to ask yourself. And that doesn't mean that even if you dive headfirst that you're not scared. Of course you are, because there's that doubt in the back of your head that this could really end badly. But I mean, at some point in life, you do have to just dive in and put your best foot forward and see what happens. Because there's a lot of things that are outside of your control in life, as we all are very aware of. And one of those things, as much as marriage is in your control, you know, you have to remember there's another person involved in that. And so, you know, they have to be 100% into the relationship as well. Don't be scared of your nerves.
I think a big thing too to consider is, especially when making a decision like that, is you have to make sure that you're confident in who you are as a person, because I think a lot of people enter into those lifelong commitments without really having an understanding of who they are, and that's why you see those types of things fail. And I think what I'm speaking for myself in a big sense too, where I was entering into committed relationships when I didn't know anything about myself. And granted, I still don't know a lot about myself, but I'm a lot more confident and certain in who I am. And so that enables me to be more certain in a committed relationship. Whereas, you know, 4 years ago, it wouldn't be so much the case. So make sure you're happy with who you are as a person before you enter into a lifelong commitment with someone else. Because if you're to change and discover things about yourself that you didn't even know existed, that could alter your idea of who you are entirely, then you're not going to be the same person to that other person as well. And you're going to want different things.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I think that's good advice.
Sweet. Well, that's probably like the smartest thing I've ever said in my entire life. So I think we should just end the podcast there because it's I'm going to go out on a high note like George Costanza. Is there anything else that you want to add before we say goodbye to our Suck Army?
No, that is it. Just thank you again for listening to the podcast. Follow us on Instagram. Leave us 5-star reviews. And please don't be afraid to talk about us in the reviews as long as it's 5 stars. Thank you to Gabrielle Stone, who joined us today. Make sure you get her book, Eat, Pray, #FML, which you can buy exclusively on Amazon.
Thank you, Jared. Be sure to tune in next week to the Help I Suck at Dating podcast, where maybe we'll suck just a little bit less.
Follow Help I Suck at Dating on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.